Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A record 23% of American households now have no telephone landlines, just cell phones. 37% say they're effectively reachable only by cell. This is a story of old technology getting cast aside, but it's more than that. A whole culture and pattern of communications is going with it, and a new one is moving in. This hour On Point, the end of landlines and what it will mean for how Americans stay in touch. You can join the conversation. Have you dropped your landline service, gone completely to cell? What do we lose and gain when we disconnect the family phone? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And, of course, you can call by landline. Joining me now from New York is Spencer Ante, editor at Businessweek magazine, where he follows the telecommunications industry. He's also author of Creative Capital, George Dorio and the Birth of Venture Capital. Spencer, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here.
And from Seattle, Washington, Scott Steinberg is with us, publisher of the technology product review site DigitalTrends.com. He's an industry consultant and founder of several high-tech companies. Scott, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
We're good. Spencer, paint the picture for us. I mean, the headlines I'm seeing here in Business Week is, you know, sort of the kind of end of the line for landline phones. Not right now. Still hurdles in front of cell phones in some areas. But you say landlines are on their way to being dinosaurs.
Yeah, the CDC study that you mentioned in the intro to the piece confirms a trend that's been going on for a number of years right now, which is that consumers are substituting their cell phones for their landlines. And I think the recession is accelerating that trend a bit because people are, you know, hurting and they're looking for ways to save money. And one of the easiest ways to save money is to stop your landline. The other major trend that I see going on right now that's driving this is that the cable industry is competing aggressively with the telecom industry. There's a big sort of smackdown going on in that space, and so the cable companies, at the same time people are dropping their landlines, the cable companies are actually coming in and offering consumers cheaper landline phone service over the internet.
And you've got big old phone companies making that evolution, too. I'm reading here the head of Verizon, of course, one of the biggest descendants of the old Bell telephone system, saying this is in September. He's saying the Verizon's simply no longer concerned with telephones that are connected with wires, Spencer.
I think that might be a little bit of an overstatement. I was just checking the numbers, and just to give you some perspective on this. So in 2005, the phone companies had a combined total of about 77 million landline customers. At the end of this year, they're going to have about 54 million. So they've lost about 20 million customers on those landlines, but they still have 54 million customers, which is a lot. And if you study the history of technology, which is something that I did in my book, Creative Capital, what you find is that new technologies rarely completely replace old ones. So what happens usually is that the new technology will come into play, and it will just diversify the ecosystem, and people will have more choices, and the older ones will have a sort of slow but gradual decline. And, you know, are they dinosaurs? Yeah, they're kind of dinosaurs, but they're at the beginning of extinction, not at the end of extinction. I would say it's going to be another at least 10 or 20 years before landlines get down to, you know, very low numbers.
And yet, Scott, of course, you know, early on in a process like that, you begin to feel its impact on the way people communicate in a very serious way. I mean, here's a report in the New York Times saying that snipping sound you hear around copper phone lines is just going to get louder, Scott.
Yeah, I agree, Tom. I mean, I also agree with Spencer in that to some degree, this is an extinction level event, but it's going to take time to play out. What you see here are people whose lifestyles have changed. We're on the go more. We need to receive information wherever we are. We need to be able to take calls. We need to be able to check emails. And cellular phones allow you a lot more flexibility in that regard than, of course, the landline. So people are cutting the cord an increasing number. As he also pointed out, the recession is having an impact here because on top of this, you can get much better value from pay-as-you-go or unlimited cell cell phone plans. You've got cable providers eating into it with these package deals. So you can go to AT&T and Comcast. You can get your cellular phone, your TV, your landline all in one. But in many ways, that's digital. And on top of this, you also have the fact that you've got programs like Skype, which you can be used to calling around the country or video conferencing for free or much less than you traditionally would if you were using a landline. So landlines are not as convenient as they used to be. You used to have to fight with the entire family. Dad needed to take a business call.
Right.
Little sis was on the line with her best friend. Now people want cell phones so that they can take calls wherever they go and constantly be accessible. And they appreciate the convenience and the ability that many smartphones, in fact, like the iPhone or, of course, the Droid, these resemble PCs, portable computers in your pocket. So they allow you way more flexibility and they're much more functional devices than what you would get from a traditional handset.
There are a million things you can do with them. What you don't do or don't have to do is sort of be tethered to the same communications portal as American families were for decades. Spencer, I'm looking here at there is a cost issue here, and recession may have aggravated that. Looking at this, again, this is the CDC survey, quite right, that we're citing here. It says among American poor households, the proportion of wireless only has grown from 16% in 06 to 33% this year, a full third. Among the so-called near poor, it's 14% to 27%. Among the households that are not poor, 9% to 19%. But that's getting up toward a quarter of even households who could afford whatever they like, I guess, Spencer, saying no thanks to the landline.
Yeah, those are interesting numbers. I'm not surprised that poor people have a higher rate of cell phone-only homes. It sort of fits in with the idea that they have less money, and so they are more inclined to cut that landline. I was looking at some numbers. If you look at the rate of landline losses from 2005 to 2007, it was really only 3 or 4%. But you get into 2008 when the recession really hit, and 2009, those landline losses doubled to about 10 or 11%. So you're definitely seeing an impact of the recession on the telecommunications industry. But as Scott mentioned, the whole business model of telecom has shifted from landlines to wireless. And so wireless is really the focus of their business, and they're pouring most of their investment into that. And I would agree that cell phones really have become essentially mini computers in your pocket. They used to be kind of simple devices. You could make a phone call. It would work sometimes. It wouldn't work other times. But now you can do so many different things with your cell phone. You can buy things on your buy products. You can schedule appointments. You can,
get directions, all the rest.
Mm-hmm. It's this whole what we call the app economy that the iPhone has pioneered. There's over 100,000 little applications you can download on your cell phone. So the amount of functionality on it has just exploded. It's really incredible.
We're going to look at the social implications of the change, but what about the business implications? I mean, the relative investment that companies are making. People still have landlines, but are telecom businesses pouring billions into keeping those wires, up and good and in tip-top shape, or is it all going, to fiber optics?
Well, it's going to both, because another trend that's going on is while the cable industry is poaching phone customers from the telecoms, the telecoms aren't sitting still. They're actually looking at the cable industry and saying, oh, wow, look at all those people who pay over $100 a month for TV. So the phone companies are investing billions in putting fiber optics into the ground so they can deliver television. But as you see, the recent flap over the iPhone, the CEO of AT&T Wireless just drew a lot of fire because their company has been criticized for their cell phone service and dropped calls and slow download speeds.
Right.
And now they're considering actually charging people more for cell phone service and for data plans on those cell phone packages. And so you see Verizon, which is the chief competitor of AT&T, having a field day with that. They have all these commercials they're putting on, like there's a map for that, because AT&T, they think, doesn't have great coverage, and a lot of independent reports would corroborate that. And so, we just wrote a story this week, actually, which reported that Verizon said that they could handle the iPhone traffic and that they've been actually making investments to prepare for the iPhone in case they ever get a deal with Apple. And so this has become a really big issue in the industry, fighting over the quality of your network.
Is it just an urban dynamic primarily, Spencer, or what about rural areas and the switch to cell, snipping the landline?
I think it's everywhere. You know, I think if you're in a rural area, I mean, the need for communications is just as much, if not more, than in an urban area. So, you know, I think that rural areas have tended to have poorer coverage because the telecoms believe that they can't make as much money because there's not as many people. And so maybe they're feeling it worse than the urban areas. But there are certain urban areas like New York and San Francisco that have so much, so many people, and that they're so technology intensive that they just overwhelm these networks. And that's what's happening with AT&T and the iPhone right now. They're being overwhelmed in those two major cities.
Spencer Ante with Business Week magazine, editor and writer there, author of Creative Capital. Spencer, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Scott, we're going to look at the social side of this, but I mean, there's a century, nearly a century of Americans with the sense of a phone that's somewhere in a house that a family shares, and it's been a kind of hearth, a kind of tool that brought people together. Does that survive?
Well, it's definitely going to survive. There's always going to be demand for landlines. Let's be honest. Not everybody wants to be reached 24/7. The reality is we don't want to take business calls at 2 in the morning, which increasingly cell phone users are having to do at the pace we're going today. Right. On top of this, of course, landlines offer a better connection. As Spencer was pointing out, that cellular coverage isn't always the greatest across the country. Once you step outside of urban areas, metropolitan centers, it can start to get a bit spotty. You know, there's small business owners out there. We're increasingly becoming a virtualized society, so business is getting done from people's back bedrooms. And if you have a cell phone, you don't want to have to deal with dropped calls or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Landlines are also a comfort, as you pointed out, a hearth to some. They let you actually have that comfort of knowing that there's an emergency service available and you
Scott,
can always be
hold
reached.
The thought. We've got to take a short break right here. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Americans abandoning their telephone landlines and what that means for homes and families and how we communicate. 11% of American households cell only in 2006. First half of this year, 23%, and it is still going up, way up. Here's the way it used to be. From the 1970s hit The Brady Bunch, here's Mike Brady, played by Robert Reed, answering the family phone. His wife, played by Florence Henderson, is by his side.
Hello, Ed. Listen, who? Alice? Yeah, just a minute. Alice! Telephone!
I'll take it in the kitchen.
Sam, the butcher. Since when does a butcher call at 8 o'clock at night?
Since he and Alice have been dating. Be glad. You should see the difference in the cuts of meat we've been getting.
There you go, the family phone. Everybody's around it. Everybody kind of knows what's going on in everyone else's life when it's a landline. Scott Steinberg has joined us from Seattle. He is publisher of the technology product review site digitaltrends.com. We're joined right now as well from Irvine, California by Mimi Ito. She's a research scientist at the University of California, Irvine, studying new media use, especially among young people in the U.S. and for that matter, Japan. Mimi Ito, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Pleasure to join you.
So does it change our communication patterns when we go from landline to everybody with their own cell phone? I guess it must.
Yeah, I think this trend that we're seeing with the landlines is part of a much longer burning trend where people are prioritizing ways of communication that are really in the hands of an individual more than in the hands of a collective attached to a place, whether that's a home or a classroom or a workplace. More and more people are taking communication into their own hands and personalizing them to prioritize the kinds of communications and relationships that they want to prioritize on their terms.
What does that mean for sharing in relationships, Mimi? I mean, a lot of Americans will have grown up, not the youngest generation now, but before them, in households where through that flow of calls over the landline that was a communal phone in the house, you knew who was calling, you knew basically who was talking with whom outside the house, you knew a lot about each other's lives.
Yeah, I think the Brady Bunch clip that you played was a good indicator of how these things have been shifting. I think when we did our research with youth and families and new media in the home, we found that parents were struggling much more to keep that sort of ongoing informal monitoring of kids' everyday communication, because it's not just the cell phone, but it's instant messaging, text messaging, all the social network sites, that there's so many more ways for people to have private communication that are really not being monitored by the household as a whole. So I think this raises a lot of new challenges. I think at the individual level, it opens up a lot more choice and customization, but it means that those collectives, like the household, really have to work much harder in order to get that kind of social information about one another.
Instead of it happening kind of automatically around the water cooler of the landline phone, we've got a lot of response here from Facebook. Here's Jeff saying, after talking about doing this for a couple of years, we finally pulled the plug a few months ago. The final prompt happened when the old answering machine died. We don't miss the old landline a bit with so many other ways to communicate, and surely that is true. Here's Catherine saying, when we moved, we opted not to get a landline, and this is, I guess, a sort of younger family. When our son is old enough to use a phone, we'll have to decide whether to get a landline for friends and emergencies, but that decision is a few years away. Let's hear from a listener, Carrie in Charlotte, Vermont. Carrie, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Well, what do you know?
Well, I recently moved to a new house and decided to not install a landline. And as I was getting in my car this morning, I turned on the radio, and there you guys were. I'd just been contemplating getting a cell phone for my 11-year-old son because I work within walking distance of my house, and sometimes I leave him home, and sometimes I just need to communicate with him. And
sure.
So I'm curious if the guests feel that the loss of landlines will now mean more and more children will start having cell phones, and what does that mean for them?
I guess many already are, but let us look at it. Scott, let me come first to you. Kids and cell phones, I mean, already the numbers are very high. Do you know offhand who's getting what at what age and how much independence they have on their own communications beam?
Sure. Well, obviously, it's a parent's individual decision. So we're starting to see kids who are younger and younger having cell phones, perhaps as early as 8 years old even. And it's very liberating for the kids because they're able to communicate. They're able to individualize their phones. It's a very personal form of expression. But of course, from a parent's perspective, me being one myself, in many ways, it's somewhat mortifying, too, because you can't actually keep tabs on who your kids are in contact with. Now, certainly, you could review text message logs. You can see who they're calling on your cell phone bill. But as a parent, you also have to be aware what kids are doing on these cell phones, because back in the day, as you pointed out, we all shared a household actual landline, so you knew roughly who your kids were interacting with. Now with PCs, with cell phones, you have to keep tabs of this, but it's a great way for parents and kids to keep in touch. It's certainly very liberating for kids to be able to communicate with their friends one-on-one without somebody looking over their shoulder. So it's an issue of trust, and again, it comes down to the individual parent's decision.
Mimi, you've done a lot of research on this. I'm looking here at some numbers that say about half of all children age 10 to 13 now have cell phones. 83% of teenagers in the U.S. have their own. These are pretty high numbers. Do you have recommendations about when and what?
I think, as Scott says, it is an individual choice that varies a lot by family. Once people start abandoning landlines, of course, then it furthers the urge for, you know, kids to have their own cell phones earlier. What we do find, though, in families is that, or in human behavior around cell phone use in general, is that cell phone communication tends to strengthen bonds that are already strong. So, sure, it means that your kids are in close communication with their significant other or their peers who they're really close to, but it can also really strengthen family communication as well. And a lot of parents and kids have talked about how text messaging in particular is a really great way for families to keep in touch in a lightweight way that doesn't introduce a lot of overhead. So I think as long as the family is also using the new communication tools to have more explicit communication with one another, it doesn't have to be something that tears a family apart.
But it is individualized. I mean, you don't know who your children are text messaging. The communal face of it goes away a little bit here, at least. Nathan in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Nathan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was wondering if either of your guests have any comment on whether or not this is just a continuation of what happened, I don't know, I'm in college, but I guess 40 years ago when the transformation happened from community lines with the individual, like, ringtones for a house to the individual houses having phones for themselves.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if you go back far enough, everybody could hear everybody's calls on a party line. Scott, that sounds like it's probably before your time, but there's a trend line here from the whole town being in on phone calls to entirely personal phones.
Yeah, certainly, as we heard in that clip before, that getting a phone call used to be a communal event. It used to be very exciting. And actually, as you pointed out, Tom, it used to be a hearth for the family, but growing up in the 80s, for our household, it was actually pretty divisive because in that age, you started to see computers take greater prominence. You started to see modems, BBSs, and inevitably, it led to fights amongst the household
who owns the line at this moment, right?
Exactly, exactly. So, yes, this is indeed a continuation. And for many ways, the telephone companies, Ma Bell and whatnot, they're starting to take it on the chin from all angles here, whether it is the fact that you've got cellular phone companies eating into their bottom line, whether it is the fact that you've got cable providers packaging bundled goods. I actually moved recently and opted to take a landline, but it was only as part of a digital package. So the reality is, were I given the option, especially from a cost standpoint as well, I'm not necessarily sure that I would make that same decision again. And I think many Americans are faced with the same choice.
Mimi, I can remember my grandmother, if she were still around, she'd probably shush me for saying so, but this is many years ago, listening in on the party line. It was just kind of part of the neighborhood entertainment to hear a little bit of what other people were talking about. This was a shared line in a rural community. And, you know, you could hear the phone conversations of the next house and the next house down the road. Mimi, that was very communal.
I think the caller is right that this is part of a much longer trend where those relationships that we associate with places are sort of shifting in a way to be much more personalized and intimate. So we saw that in the shift from, you know, communications being attached to a unit of a community, say, and moving to the unit of the household. And now with the cell phone, we've seen the, you know, first truly personal addressing system where the communication is going directly to an individual with a device that's really carried with them all the time. And that furthers that trend towards personal and intimate communication. And we find with most people that when they're given the choice, they will tend to prioritize those more personal, intimate relationships rather than the collectives of people who happen to be occupying the same space with them.
I mean, do we know, Scott or Mimi, in houses that give up the landline, does that necessarily mean that everybody in that house gets their own cell phone? I mean, I realize that's an economic question, but what's the pattern? Scott, do you know?
Well, certainly in most households that tend to cut the cord, if in fact you do have multiple individuals, they all need to stay in touch. They all need access to emergency numbers. People want to know where you are and want to be able to reach you throughout the day. So many of them are switching to family plans, which can offer a better value so that everybody actually has a cell phone versus one single individual, say the head of the household.
So, but everybody's got their own number. Everybody's out on their own kind of branch of the tree there, all reachable. But as Mimi says, all very much with a very personal attachment to the world.
Yes, certainly. And, you know, the nice part about it is the fact that you have many more options today for staying in touch, for getting a cellular phone, for having your own personalized means of communication. And the nice part about it is the only thing you miss by not having that landline is not having to hunt in the frickin' couch cushions to find out where that handset's gone.
Right. Yeah, when another kind of wire isn't there. Mark in Newburyport, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
We're well. What do you know, Mark?
Hi. So I don't have to hunt for my handset because I'm 35 years old and I still use a rotary phone from the 60s.
There's a way back.
And
why?
I actually, well, I moved to Los Angeles from, you know, the North Shore in 2000, and I got rid of my landline in 2000. Lived only off a cell phone. Moved back here in 2009 and moved into a house that had a landline. And so decided to get the service and had this old rotary phone lying around. And I have it sitting on my desk at home. And there's something about the sound of it, the feel of it, the kinesthetics of turning the, you know,
yes.
of misdialing, which is actually kind of funny. You know,
right.
Too many zeros, too many nines in a number, you get angry.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love the feel of it. And I'm... I guess maybe I'm being a fuddy old duddy at you know, 35, but I would love it if we could have that same sort of feel that we have with those old, you know, handsets. that we don't have now, which I'm calling, by the way, from my BlackBerry.
right. To cite yet another channel. I mean, that's great. Maybe you're not an old fuddy-duddy at all. Maybe you've got some retro cool going on there. But Mimi, I mean, I know exactly what Mark's talking about. There's a kind of, you know, sort of Proust Madeleine quality to that old of the rotary phone. It brings back a whole era. He's still doing it in 2009.
Right, and you're seeing people with ringtones that simulate the old ringers of old phones. And I think there is nostalgia for early technology forms, which in a way I think is an indication of how fast we've moved to the new forms, because these older forms seem so anachronistic now.
Do you see, you've studied Japan a lot. Do you see a very different sort of networks or patterns of communication there with their even greater cell phone penetration and usage?
Well, I think in Japan we saw the widespread adoption of cell phones and text messaging happening about a decade earlier than the U.S. So what we're seeing there is actually not that different than what we're seeing in the U.S., except Japan is probably further along in terms of people dependence on the cell phone and specifically the smartphone. So internet connectivity, data access, gaming, media access on the phone, which is only just starting to take off among certain populations in the U.S. I think the U.S. saw that flip to text messaging being more pervasive than voice a year or two ago. That happened in Japan about a decade ago. So if we're on the same trajectory in the U.S., it would makes sense that we'll see more and more reliance on the handheld device for more and more kinds of media, information, communication access.
Let's go to David in Spokane, Washington. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I work for a former Bell operating company, a local exchange carrier. And, we are seeing a lot of landline loss. But the important thing to remember here is that the phone companies are not going to die up and wither away. They are adapting and changing with the new technology. I think the landline you're going to see, if it's not already becoming that way, is just another feature to that connection to the house. The bandwidth being the primary driver for internet service or TV service, and cell phones are a part of that. That's just, the companies are just like your previous guests have noted all the players. Cable TV, former telephone company, whatever, are looking for that multidimensional play where they've got video, voice, data, all in one package for that home. So it's a good thing for consumers, I think. There's a lot of choices. It makes companies be more competitive and leaner. But there's still a large segment of America that doesn't live in a built-up urban area that can get good quality cell phone service.
Do you think that land connection, David, will that land connection be a copper wire then or fiber optic?
Well, the copper network is what's in place primarily to most every home in America, and it's going to remain that way for a long time. And the reason why is because it's expensive to lay a fiber piece of glass to every house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of new neighborhoods, new developments are getting they're having spare conduits put up to the house so that fiber can be pulled in later. Verizon, I don't work for Verizon, that's a neighboring company, but they are in doing a huge build-out, from what I've read anyway, of fiber to the home. So you are going to see it eventually migrate that way, but there's a significant investment that the companies have made over the course of 100-plus years in their copper network, and we are going to leverage that to the last possible moment we can.
Making the most of it while it's there. David in Spokane, thank you very much for that call. Looking here at a New Yorker cartoon or recalling one I saw recently, and it's two women, maybe 30-something women, and they're talking about a guy that one of them's dating, I guess, and one says to the other, he's very stable. He's got a landline. Mimi, I guess it's an old-fashioned indicator. We're talking this hour about Americans abandoning their telephone landline connections and what that means for homes and families and how we communicate. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Americans abandoning their telephone landlines and what that means for homes and families and how we communicate. Here's from the 1970s slapstick comedy show Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. Lily Tomlin played a fast-talking telephone operator.
One ringy-dingy. Two ringy-dingy. Oh, a gracious good afternoon, Mr. Beadle. I'm Miss Tomlin, your representative from the telephone company.
Yeah, that's the way back machine. No more. So where are we headed? Scott Steinberg is here from the digitaltrends.com. Mimi Ito is with us from the University of California at Irvine. And we've got Jason on the line from Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Hi, Jason. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you doing?
Well.
So I just wanted to say I lived in New York for many years. I live in Boston now, but I was there during 9/11 as well as the blackout.
Yeah.
And there were, you know, obviously no cell phone service whatsoever. People were actually queuing up at public phones. And it was, you know, very interesting because everybody had thought we were, and I think we now think we're very advanced technologically, and you go through an experience like that and it really sets you back a bit. Now, since I've lived in Boston, I have a landline. Not that I'm expecting anything horrible to happen, but, you know, they're not as reliable and they're, you know, subject to circumstance like everything else. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. 9/11, they were gone. Blackouts, they were gone. And, of course, public phones aren't even around anymore. Scott Steinberg, what about the reliability / vulnerability factor if everybody's on cell phones one day?
Right. Well, this is a very salient point. I mean, cell phone networks are still dodgy things. You're at the point where they're getting better and better with each passing year. But at this point, cell phones aren't perfect. And certainly there is that worry that in the case of an emergency, a disaster, or perhaps if, in fact, there's too much network traffic there, there might be some sort of outage. Now, the reality of this happening, it's a small chance, but there is a chance. And landlines definitely do allow you to stay in touch more often. Just because we have new technology doesn't mean that it's been perfected yet, as we've so eloquently pointed out here. So in a situation like 9/11, of course, yes, it can be very useful to have a landline around. Now, do you necessarily need one in every single household? That's a good question.
Let's go to Jeremy in Norfolk, Virginia. Jeremy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question as we move away from landlines and more towards everyone having cell phones, doesn't the area code become obsolete? Why don't we just have, you know, a national 10-digit number system?
And no sense necessarily of the geography. I mean, already people use cell phones that have area codes from all over the country. Mimi, how about it? Have you looked at that at all?
I think it's a interesting shift that we're seeing, not just with the area code issue, but in general how people are thinking of their personal address and identity and communications networks. So more and more people are using things like Skype or IM or email addresses to keep in touch. So often we associate our colleagues and friends with those kinds of identities and not just the telephone. And I think it's a general shift towards those sort of place-based identities being replaced by things that have more of an individual and personal kind of address system.
I mean, in that sense as well, the home kind of disappearing or the household disappearing from the communications profile. It's just here I am, wherever I am.
Yeah, I think that's right. And then, you know, when we were interviewing teenagers in Japan even 10 years ago, which was at the beginning of the big shift towards mobile, we found pretty early on that kids had a very strong preference to call or contact one another through a communication channel that they knew they were going to get the individual, and they didn't have to encounter some other person in the household, even though it was more expensive to call on the cell phone. And they really reserved the landline for, you know, backups in the case of one rare friend who didn't have a cell phone, for example.
Here's another post from our website, onpointradio.org, from Greg, saying the idea of a landline or household telephone is long gone and now strangely a luxury, which cell phones used to be. He says, you call people, not households. I do kind of miss the perfunctory exchange with my friend's family as I tried to get a hold of the person I was actually calling. Also, a household phone, he writes, is more likely to get answered and get that person on the phone. I mean, Scott, there it is again. You will communicate one-to-one without the intermediation of mom or dad or sis or the little brother. It's all about that direct target, Scott.
Yes, certainly. I mean, right now, what you're bringing up is a question more of sociology than mm-hmm. direct communications, because people used to be comfortable. You have to exchange with friends and family, make small talk, and to some degree, you felt almost as if you knew these individuals as well. But now, if you want to reach a single given person, you have a single point of contact. It's one-to-one. There's this exchange of information, and you don't have some of those colloquialisms that used to be around the communications process.
People had the certain greetings that they'd use for the household phone. You'd expect to be handing it off. It's interesting, though. I'm seeing here the highest cell-only household ratio is now in the South and the Midwest, not necessarily on the coast where you might think it would be. Jeannie in Leominster, Massachusetts. Jeannie, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm also a holdout with still having a landline, partially because I have young children and like that security, but also I work from home. And I don't want to be accessible 24/7. I like having, you know, when I'm at the park with my kids, I don't want an employer or a client calling me.
And so it's your little last barrier between what the whole world and your private bubble.
Right. So the only people that have my cell phone are family and friends, and I very rarely will give it to a client or an employer, and usually only if they need to reach me while I know I'm on way to a meeting or something.
But is your assumption then that if you only had a cell phone, people would expect you always to answer it and they wouldn't believe that you just might not be there, not seeing it at that moment?
Yeah. You know, I have a lot of colleagues that also have cell phones and have switched to that and work from home or are consultants, and they do answer the call all the time. So I don't think my clients would necessarily expect it. I just think that people tend not to be very good at setting those barricades up for themselves. And I suspect that if I got a call from a client on my cell phone, I'd answer it no matter what. Or it'd be harder and harder for me to say, oh, no, not now.
Right. So that's your little skirt of privacy there. Mimi Ito, it is interesting. You know, I now see people's attitudes toward landlines changing. I'm often in households where I see them ignored when they ring, but I seldom see cell phones ignored. At least people, you know, are going to look and see who's there. It's probably right in their pocket. But the landline has, in a way, been demoted in status. Like, you know, it's probably a telemarketer calling, so I'll let it ring.
I think that's right. People feel like if somebody's trying to reach them individually, they'll call their cell phone. So there's sort of a certain skepticism for some households who are very cell phone dominant about who might be calling on the landline. It might be, you know, a telemarketer or somebody, you know, we get these calls from our kids' schools that are recorded calls, confirmations of dental appointments, these more formal relationships rather than the personal or intimate relationships that we tend to prioritize. When you look at people's cell phone logs, you find that for text messaging and calls, people are really in ongoing contact with a very small number of people, usually 3 to 5 others. And so you see a narrowing of social communication to those relationships. Even though somebody's cell phone address book may have hundreds of entries, very few of those are accessed.
And what about address books, Scott? We've had inquiries on that front as well. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, I guess, phone books, you know, with a landline, the odds are you'll be able to sort of put a name and a number together. How's that work in the cell phone era?
Right. Well, in the cell phone era, you have most of your contacts on board on your phone in a virtual sense. You also sync up with Outlook, so you'll be able to get your contacts that way. Of course, Google, you can always look up anybody's name, number. There's a number of services. So the reality is, our household actually gets phone books. We typically dump them right in the recycling bin, and I suspect that's what many households are doing as well, because the reality is now if you want to find a plumber, if you want to find a service provider, if you're looking for somebody in the area, better and more effective to go online. You can actually do it faster than having to flip through all those pages.
And what percentage of cell phone users' telephone numbers are listed somewhere online?
Well, there's actually a decent percentage of that, but the reality is it can be a little bit harder to track down cell phone numbers for individuals. That said, this is a very private form of communication. It's not public like the household handset like we were talking about. So the reality is, in most cases, those people are going to give you their numbers. I don't know a lot of people who give out their cell phone numbers to people that may just randomly be calling.
So, I mean, there again, the sort of accessibility of us one to another diminished, even though the sort of potency of our communications technologies increased.
Yes, certainly. But, you know, again, to the same degree, having a cell phone, it's a very personal and private form of communications. And as the previous caller pointed out, there's the expectation that if somebody's calling you on your cell phone, it's somebody of importance and it's somebody you're going to want to hear from, so you're going to feel obligated to take that call. In fact, in many ways, it's very Pavlovian. It hails back to the era when we started out with beepers, pagers, and then went to the early cell phones, and it was doctors, lawyers, professionals who had them who needed to be reached on the spot. And I think to some degree, we've been trained to actually pick up that cell phone when it rings, whereas with the household phone, you could discount it to some regard.
Mimi, in that sense, the landline, even though it was in your house and it was, you know, you who paid the bill, there's a sense in which it was a more civic property than this sort of personal ownership sense and private sense of the cell phone.
I think that's right. I think it was a much more collective sort of technology, communication technology, than what you're seeing with the cell phone. And, you know, it's very interesting that even our social norms around picking up the phone reflect this. It's not that rude to pick up, a call that you think might be for somebody else if it's on a home phone. But it's pretty weird or odd if you picked up somebody else's cell phone mm-hmm. to answer it, or even to look at somebody's cell phone uninvited is sort of a violation of personal space. And so it's very liberating to people to have that sense of control and privacy, but it does sort of start to limit some of that more serendipitous social contact.
Is there a way in which we are in fact isolated by cell phones, even though they're communications devices? Because you know, as you and Scott say, they're more personal. You may have a smaller circle of people that you share that number with. The whole sense of it is less community-oriented.
I think it's really a question of which social groups you choose to prioritize. So I think we're finding that people are communicating and in social contact now more than ever. It's just that people can be selective about it in ways that weren't as easy as in the past. So, for example, we find that young people stay in contact with friends from, say, high school or their prior home if they moved, because they have these new communication technologies. So they're able to stay in touch with a collective group from a past period of their life that they may not share geography with. Now, does that mean they're becoming less communal or less social? It's really about the sort of conflicts we're seeing about different forms of social and communal, I think.
Mm. Let's get a call from Kentucky, Monticello, Kentucky. And Pam, hi, Pam, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I feel there's an elephant in the room that's being ignored, similar to what the tobacco companies did in hiding the deadly effects of smoking, and similar to what the nuclear power advocates are talking about when the horrors, the almost eternal horrors of nuclear waste are not discussed, and that is the health issues of cell phones. It's microwave technology,
yep.
The same microwaves that so-called cook our food, which they don't, they bombard the food to heat it up, are bombarding our brains. And there was a study where an egg was put in between two cell phones that called each other, and it was hard-boiled in something like an hour.
Oh, boy.
And a recent study showed that men's hip bones are crumbling because they're keeping their cell phones in their pockets. So I'd like to hear what that address.
Absolutely, especially if people become more and more linked just to the cell phone, more and more dependent just on that. Scott Steinberg, we've heard conflicting reports for a long time. What's the latest on cell phone radiation and its risks?
Well, the findings remain inconclusive in an official sense, so nobody's been able to say definitively just what the long-term effects are. But keep in mind that we've only had this technology for a relatively short period of time, so folks are still trying to get a handle on what it means. Now, that said, I haven't grown a third eye yet, but that's not to say within the next couple of years it might not be a possibility.
But the risk, I mean, you've got, the radiation transmitted by that little
sure.
antenna and circuitry inside your handset. You've got electromagnetic waves. They're not directional, so they're going out away from your head and into your head. I mean, it's all happening.
Yeah, it's a very distinct possibility, and we have no idea what the effect is on children's development. Of course, they're getting cell phones at a younger age. So it remains to be proven. That said, there could be a very real fear there that cell phones are having some effect on our growth, on our physiology. Whether or not that actually is the case, though, I leave that to the brighter minds.
Mimi, have you looked at this? Do you think we're getting a full airing on that front? If the country, the culture, the world is becoming more and more cell phone attached, are we really staring honestly at the potential health consequences?
Yeah, I think I've seen studies on and off about various health impacts of the cell phone, and You know, like Scott said, the technology has also been evolving fairly rapidly. So as with all new technologies, it's very difficult for this kind of research to keep up, especially when you see growth and adoption happening at such a rapid pace.
I'm looking here at a report. This is reported in Wired from the Environmental Working Group. Senior scientist there, Olga Nindenko, says, we think that based on current standards, there's increased risk of developing brain tumors in long-term users, people who have used cell phones for more than 10 years from radiation in cell phones. I mean, Scott, if this is the present and the future, everybody will have used a cell phone for more than 10 years.
Yeah, certainly there's risk of exposure. Everybody's going to have a cell phone. But who knows what those models from 10 years ago contained? I mean, even if you scroll back that far, you're looking at things that were more like bricks that had the antennas. So whether or not it's actually going to have a long-term health risk, again, it's uncertain. But yes, it is a viable concern.
It's worth looking at the radiation output of individual cell phones. I think there's a pretty wide variation in there. Here's a fun email from Kristen. She says, last night I definitely felt the pinch of not having a landline. I locked my purse with my keys and cell phone in the trunk of my car outside my apartment. I had to bother a neighbor to call AAA. I haven't had a landline since graduating college in 2004. I mean, there's the change. Of course, you couldn't have gotten the house to the landline anyway. One way or another, Mimi, you're in trouble if you're apart from your phone.
I think that's right. I think people have become very, very dependent on their devices, particularly the cell phone that really is becoming the primary communication portal for a lot of people. And, you know, we found when we were interviewing Japanese teens around this that more and more the social norm for, you know, showing up and meeting up in town, it was okay if you were late because people could reach you. But if you forgot your cell phone, that was a real problem.
That's a no-no. And the wires go on getting snipped. Mimi Ito at the University of California, Irvine, it's been great having you with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Scott Steinberg, publisher of the technology product review site DigitalTrends.com. Scott, thank you very much for being with us today. Happy calling. Safe calling to you.
My pleasure, Tom. Thanks.
Listeners, thanks for joining us today. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and follow us on Twitter and find us at Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.